Welcome back to Shattering Myths. Speaking of myths, they're going to continue to run the ad. I'm going to continue to condemn the myth. The happy guy that found his little wife, he says, you know, for us, God gave us this tool. This, to find each other, to find love. No, God did not give you Christian Mingle. If you think that, then you are as deceived about that as you are every other aspect of your God-forsaken religion. And then their byline was, of course, the standard byline for Christian Mingle, find God's match for you. You know, if you want to find God's match for you, go read the Torah. He claims to be his match for you. That's what he's offering. You want to find his match for you? He created the means to do that. He created the mechanism to do that, called the terms and conditions of the covenant. You want to find God's match for you? Read the Torah. If you want to find a database matched using criterion conceived by some psychologist and programmer, then go to Christian Mingle. Yesterday, I was sharing a story, and we got calls towards the end of the hour, and I wasn't able to wrap it up. I want to again explain why I was trying to use the idea of the part of the human anatomy that is the place from which poo is excreted, and it doesn't have to be human animal. It's just use animal anatomy. In fact, I didn't even associate with human anatomy. But the part of animal anatomy from which poo is excreted as being equivalent to Christians referring to Yahusha as Jesus Christ, calling him bullpoo. Would be the God's specific term. And I wanted to share that, what God said about what his views are of not respecting his name, which is Yahweh, not respecting his corporeal manifestation's name, the most set apart, Yahusha. I want to reread what God said about those who act like Patrick did and disregard Yahweh's name and change Yahusha's name. Because he associated them with bull poo. So that's how he views it. When you disregard his name, when you change his name, when you don't respect his name. From his perspective, when you do that, it's like having your face covered in bull poo. And then we'll consider, after I share this with you, why he chose bull poo. And now for you all, this condition. Priests, ministers, judges, government officials, clerics, teachers, officers, counselors, and advisors. If you do not listen, listen to whom? Yahweh. How do you listen to Yahweh? Read his Torah and prophets. Recite it out loud. If you do not listen, and if you do not place it in your heart, how do you place something in your heart? You either have to listen to it or read it with your eyes, see it. Process what you have learned in terms of what God has said so that you understand it. Think about it so that you say, you know, that makes sense. And then once you come to know it, understand it, and accept it, then you're placing it in your heart. Well, the point where you're saying, this is something I have learned directly from God, I've come to understand directly from God, I'm going to accept directly from God, and it's going to guide who I am, then you're placing it on your heart. That's the explanation that's being provided here. So it's far more than just realizing that his name is Yahusha and that God's name is Yahweh. It's coming to understand what that means. Yahweh means I exist, and if you look at his name and the language that the alphabet that he used to write the 10 statements, you know, you see God's hand reaching down and out to us with an open hand to lift those up who are paying attention to him, who are standing up, not kneeling down, looking up and raising their hands up to him. And those two individuals standing beside a tent peg, which is designed to show they become part of God's home where they are protected and made secure. So now for you all, this condition, priests, ministers, judges, government officials, clerics, teachers, officers, counselors, and advisors, if you do not listen, and if you do not place it on your heart to give respect, kabod, to attribute a very, very high status. Kabod is the term that God uses relative to respecting our mother and father in the second of the seven instructions on the second of those two tablets. Extraordinarily important term. This means to highly value, to view as extremely significant. If you don't give that kind of value and attribute that kind of status, that kind of respect to my name, says Yahweh, who has only one name, Yahweh. If you don't value my name, if you don't think my name is significant, then I will dispatch in association with you the curse of estrangement and incarceration. So simply for the issue of disregarding the value of Yahweh's name, of not holding his name in such high esteem that you say it, that you learn it, that you appreciate it, that you embrace it, to understand it, that you make his name literally part of the fabric of your life. Therefore, knowing that it is Yahusha, which is Yahweh saving us, making it literally the guiding light of your life, putting it upon your heart, listening to God first, and then embracing this. If you don't, relative to respecting and honoring his name in this way, then the consequence is that you're going to have the penalty of estrangement and incarceration. That's why Yahusha in the Sermon on the Mount says to all of those who call him Lord, not one of them is known to God. Not one of them is admitted into heaven. All are expressly excluded. That's what's being said here. If you don't value Yahweh's name, as that caller did not, and was unwilling to accept Yahweh's testimony regarding his name, he's saying, you're going to hell. That's what he said. Now, estrangement and incarceration is what Sheol, which is the Hebrew term, is all about. It's a place eternally separated from God. It is the place where your soul continues to live forever, but is incarcerated in what is essentially a black hole. Infinite in time, but finite in all other dimensions. That's God's testimony. Not my opinion. It's not some wild interpretation. That's what God said. You don't like it? Take it up the argument with him. See how well that works for you, Patrick. And I will disable and disassociate, therefore, all of your blessings. So not only are you cursed, therefore penalized with estrangement and incarceration, that which snares, binds, confines, separates, hems, ends, renders powerless, condemns by ostracizing and disassociating, even imprisoning, that all of the blessings associated with the covenant are gone. You'll lose them all. No salvation, no eternal life. Sorry. Well, no eternal life in heaven with God. You'll become eternal, all right. But it's not a blessing at that point. It's a curse. All of your blessings, all five of them associated with the covenant, surely then I will cause you to be estranged and I will incarcerate you. God's repeating himself. Don't want you to miss this. If you don't value his name as Yahweh, his name ain't God. It's a title. His name ain't Lord. That's Satan's name and title. His name most certainly isn't Jesus Christ. That's completely contrived. Meaningless at best. Ugly and nasty in truth. It says, if you are one of those that doesn't respect his name, then surely I'm going to cause you to be estranged. I'm going to incarcerate you. There'll be no blessings, no eternal life, no salvation, no entry into heaven. Nothing. Because you've not taken this to heart. Now, Christians want to say, God knows what's in my heart, so, you know, I'll be okay. I don't need to know all this stuff that you're telling me. You know what he says? Well, if you don't take his name to heart, you ain't coming into heaven. You're not being saved. Behold, I'm going to disapprove and reprimand. I'm being really clear here. He didn't say I'm going to forgive. He doesn't say, you know, I love all the little children. Everybody's welcome to heaven. He says, no, I'm going to disapprove and reprimand you and your offspring. Now, why is he going to reprimand and disapprove and disallow your offspring, Patrick, to enter heaven? Because you've corrupted them. Because by doing what you've done, disregarding Yah's testimony, and promoting a corrupt name, and pretending it's just fine, you corrupt your own children. You've damned them. Behold, I'm going to disapprove and reprimand. I'm going to convict you and your offspring. And I will spread and cast away dung, the waste product of bulls, feces, excrement, refuge, vomit, from Parash, that which distinctly separates and scatters relationships on your faces. You know, this is overt. God is so angry at the likes of Christians who corrupt his name, who do not value his name, or Muslims who decide to call him Allah. He says, you know, from my perspective, all of that rubbish, all of that feces, I'm going to smear it right on your faces. Why the bull? Because it's the basis of most satanic influence in religion. Christmas and Easter and Sunday, for example, and Christianity are all based on Taurus the bull, and where the constellation is relative to the sun on the vernal equinox, and then 9 months later at Christmas. And your feasts and festivals, your religious activities, he said, are going to carry you right to that application of dung. By celebrating Christmas and Easter and Sunday, you're smearing the dung on your own face. That's what brought you to the dung. That's what God is saying. We have Mariah calling in from California just as the commercial break music is playing. So, Mariah, if you wouldn't mind, hang with us through the commercial break, and we'll be with you on the other side. I'd love to hear your question, which I understand is about birthdays, when Shattering Myths returns in a moment. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. I'm your host, Yada. We've just shared with you a profoundly important statement from God. You know, when there are so many people out there, and probably the vast preponderance of people, my guess is that the percentage would be in the 99.9% of people that think when you make a big deal out of Yahweh's name, trying to share his name, trying to explain why his name is important, to show the connection between his name and his Torah, his name and his covenant, his name and the means of to salvation, his name and the invitations to meet with him, that when you, his name and with Yahusha, explaining who he is and what he was doing. That when you do that, which therefore renders the religion of Christianity moot, destroys the credibility of the religion of Islam as well, destroys the credibility of the religion of Judaism, all completely destroyed by the reverence and respect and valuing Yahweh's name. That when you bring that up, they almost universally people just respond and say, you know, God doesn't care. He knows who I'm talking to. Don't worry about it. Well, God has said, I care a lot. And here's the consequence to you. If you don't care, you'll be forever estranged from me. Now back to Mariah, who is calling in from California. Hello, Mariah. How can I help you today?
Hi. Good morning, Yada. I was wondering if there was anything that you had discovered from across that would preclude kids from celebrating or having birthday get-togethers.
Yeah, you know, I have a view on this that I'm going to share with you. This is my personal view, not God's testimony in this regard. And so my personal view is I wouldn't value it very highly. I'm going to share it with you because you've asked, but just recognize that it is nothing more than my personal view and may be worth the nothing more than the error that it takes to share it with you. My personal view is that there are things that are very important to God. Obviously, his name is very important to him. I paying attention to the terms and conditions of the covenant is vital. Attending each of his seven annual meetings is absolutely essential. And so there's things that are really important for us to do and for us to pay attention to. Not involving ourselves in explicitly religious kinds of activities. For example, don't ever worship God in any context. Don't ever go into a religious institution or religious building. Avoid them like the plague. Don't celebrate Christmas and Easter or Lent or any of these other Halloween, any of these other overtly pagan religious festivals. Now, all right. So now you've asked about what I consider a little thing amongst big things. That's not to in any way demean your question in any possible way. Your question is a very good question. That's why I'm going to share my opinion. I think it's a little thing amongst big things, kind of like Thanksgiving. You know, Thanksgiving has kind of a patriotic theme to it. It's kind of part of a harvest festival that has been celebrated by pagans for eons. Could you make a case that, you know, Thanksgiving is got some religious baggage to it, and we ought not have Thanksgiving dinner with our family when, you know, the society gives you the time off to bring family together. You know, I have Thanksgiving dinner with my family. I don't celebrate Christmas with my family. I certainly don't celebrate Easter with my family, but I'll have Thanksgiving dinner. Now, as for birthdays, my preference is that my birthday is never celebrated, but that has nothing to do with the baggage of it. You know, I really like the idea that I'm getting older. Better than the alternative, I guess, though, right? But my wife is really into birthdays. And I love my wife, and so I celebrate my wife's birthday. So my view is that, yeah, there's some baggage that if you really work, you can find that celebrating birthdays has some connotations and legacy back there and some pagan religious stuff. But, God, it's so thin. And I think it's so thin and so harmless, and it means something to certain people. So for... You know, my answer is my personal answer. This is just me. I don't celebrate my own birthday. Don't want it celebrated. I do celebrate my wife's birthday because it's important to her and she's important to me.
Okay, very good. I was curious. It's a child's birthday, and
I don't think it's a problem. Personally, I don't think it's a problem. You know, I see the Torah as being liberating. That's how God presents it. It's liberating.
Yeah. Exactly. I've never been so happy in my life since I found out where the answers were to all of the questions I've had for eons.
Yeah. You know, that one of the great examples of God, both relative to his name and to the Torah being liberating, are Moshe, who had a speech impediment, being the person to deliver God's name, and David, the guy telling us how to observe the Torah, when Dode tripped over his feet and his tongue in every possible way. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We were talking about the magic of, magic's not a very good term, but the marvelous nature of the Torah and the fact that rather than being constraining and telling you all the things you can't do, it really is an extraordinarily liberating document. And there's just two subtle insights that just really tickle my fancy. And one is that all those people who would say, I don't want to pronounce Yahweh's name for fear that I might mispronounce it, and that's going to anger God. Well, God has just told us that if you don't respect his name, that if you don't view his name as extraordinarily valuable, and not saying it would be disrespectful, it certainly wouldn't be valuing it, that you're going to be incarcerated, and there's a terrible consequence, and he's going to see you as if your face is covered in bull poop. But the very fact that there's only one characteristic that we are actually told about Moshe. We're not told how tall he was. We're not told if he was handsome or ugly. We're not told if he was bald or had a full head of hair. You know, we're not told anything that's really interesting about Moshe, except one thing, and that's constantly thrown in our face, that he had a speech impediment. And yet he was the guy that God chose to share his name with the world. Certainly tells you that that not pronouncing it properly isn't of great concern to him. Now, the second thing was just in reference to Mariah's issue or question regarding birthdays and if there's anything that we should be concerned about. The person who wrote the 119th Psalm, which is eight verses regarding each of the 22 letters in order in the Hebrew alphabet, using them as the context to explain how everything that's important for us to know relative to how we come to observe the Torah, even explaining what each of the letters mean that comprise the words, which comprise the sentences, which comprise the Torah. And in all of the 170, all of the 22 letters times eight statements on each of the 22 letters, in all of that, we don't have a single comment on a rule to obey. Not one. And it's all about observing the Torah so that we come to understand it. And then once we understand it, that we come to respect both it and its author. And then we respond to it, literally incorporating it into our lives, so that we know how to properly respond to Yahweh. And it is our admission ticket into heaven. The thing that is just so just subtle, and it's not brought up in any one of the Psalms, and it's certainly not brought up in the 119th Psalm, but it's just so enlightening to us. One person God just calls out by name and said, this person is righteous. Righteous means this person has been vindicated. This person is perfect in my eyes, upstanding, upright, is the guy whose story is probably the worst in terms of his daily behavior. I don't think there's anybody whose daily behavior is worse than Dodes, whom we know as David, in terms of the stuff that he did. And yet God says, that guy's perfect. Absolutely perfect. It's like just the same thing with God's name. You're worried about mispronouncing it? The guy I chose to share it with you had a speech impediment. Fine with me. And look at David Dode. I mean, he tripped over himself every which way in terms of his behavior. And yet God says he's perfect. Why? What's the message there? The message is that the Torah is not a bunch of rules that if you don't obey all of them, you go to hell, as Paul tells Christians. No, the Torah is a liberating document. The Torah is the means that God has deployed to deal with flawed individuals. And it makes us perfect. When we goof, we're liberated from our goofs. And so that's the reason, Mariah, when I talk about something that's small like birthdays, if God's going to exonerate Dode and from treason, from causing his general to die so that he could take another woman into his harem, he probably is going to be okay with even if he's, and if I'm wrong and he really doesn't like celebrating birthdays, even if I'm wrong, which I don't think I am, but I'm wrong about a lot of things, but I don't think that this is a big deal to God. But let's just say that it was. Wouldn't matter for you.
Right.
Because you're perfected by the means to perfect you, which is the Torah. So.
Sure. I'm just concerned about the issue of, you know, finding out that you're doing something that you shouldn't be doing and then changing your behavior accordingly.
This is what I think is appropriate there. If you're convicted, you know, I have a lot of people that write me and say, how in the world can you, you ever have a baby back rib or ever have a, have the old sea roach for dinner? Even if you're in Rhode Island and on a beachside, restaurant that is known for their sea roach, how could you ever do that?
Because, well, this is not good for you either.
Yeah, I know it isn't. neither are good for you. And that's what God says. It's not good for you. He didn't say that it's not good for him. He didn't say it's not good for the relationship. It's just not good for you. And it's because I just don't see the Torah as being a bunch of rules that God set up that he says you either obey or else. I mean, there's got to be a reason there's no Hebrew word for obey, and there's got to be a reason the Torah means teaching and guidance, not law. And it's got to be a reason that that the Torah's purpose is to liberate us from our goof. So my view is I celebrate the big things. And don't stress over the little things. And now, if you're convicted that, oh, boy, this is really making me feel terrible, don't do it. But the Torah is a liberating document. What did Dodd, who did all sorts of things far, far worse than birthdays, all of his psalms were songs, weren't they? He was celebrating the big stuff. Celebrate the big stuff. Sing about the big stuff. And I'll share and be thrilled about the big stuff, the stuff that you can learn. Now, I like a lot of the details, but the details that I like are the details that help us understand who he is and what he's offering. Like, I love the detail of bullpoo. I know that's a messy little detail, but I just love the detail of Bulpo. You know, all these little Christians think, you know, they're so holier than thou and so pure, and they all write me and say, you're going to hell for not accepting Jesus Christ as your Lord and Savior. And God says, you know, in his eyes, they're Bulpo. And it's perfect, because what is the primary manifestation of Satan in the religions? It has to do with Taurus the bull and the constellation and the images of bull. That's why it was the golden calf leading Egypt. And it has always been that way. And God says, you know, this stuff that you all call BS, well, I view BS as religion. That's why he began it. He's talked about religion primarily, politics secondarily. And he says, those of you who are spewing these lies in the name of religion, particularly those that don't respect my name, which would be every major religion, for you, it's, you know, you look like, you smell like, you are, you have become bullpoo. That's like saying, you know, you're the stuff that that Satan excretes. That's what he's saying, and that's his view of those who are involved in religion. But it's such, you know, you we might say, okay, that's being a little graphic, but look at the consequence. Why wouldn't God be graphic about it? But we're not the ones being graphic, but God was very graphic in his presentation. He wanted to make it absolutely certain that somebody couldn't read that and say, oh, you know, there's going to be a gray area here. He's really all loving. He's not really looking at them like they're covered in bull poo. No, he says, that's I'm going to estrange you. I'm going to disassociate from you. I'm going to incarcerate you. I'm not going to give you any of the blessings of the covenant, which means you can't be saved. Because from my perspective, you look like and you smell like bullpoo. By using something that graphic, if your eyes are open, you can't mistake it. And you're going to say, wow.
It's so true. My perspective has totally changed. Totally, completely changed. My whole worldview, my whole perspective on life, on relationships, on what love is completely and totally changed.
Yeah,
and
one of the things. With love, for example. What God just said here is very hateful, saying that I'm going to disassociate from you, I'm going to curse you, I'm going to incarcerate you, and you're going to walk right into your own bullpoo because of the religion, religious and political festivals that you're celebrating. You're going to walk right into it, and I'm going to see it all over your faces. That's God being very hateful of religion and those who are poisoned by religion. And yet,
incarceration is a consequence.
Correct. Yeah. And so to be loving, you have to be hateful. It is impossible to love and not be hateful.
I didn't do anything that hurt my kids.
That's correct. Absolutely. There's nothing more damaging to your children than religion and politics and patriotism and all of man's poo.
All of man's verbal diarrhea. In a church.
Yes. You know, I'm going to my son's wedding here in a little over a week, and I am so pleased that my son is not being married in a church, that he's not having a religious official officiate his wedding, that there'll be no religious statements of any kind at his wedding, and that, you know, it's in an old house that just really set up for these kinds of things, that has got great history and great architecture, and you know, it's a low key event, and nobody and nothing religious and associated with it in any which way. You know, so refreshing. You know, so refreshing that you know, he has removed himself from the bullpoo of religion. But, you know, God was graphic here, and to be loving, you have to be hateful, just as you would have to be hateful of anyone who threatens your children, as I would be hateful of anyone who threatens my children. And we are God's children. He is hateful of those who threaten them, which would be religious individuals, political individuals. It is a, and so you're right. When you come to know Yahweh as he is through his Torah, when you come to know what he's offering in terms of his covenant, and therefore he's in the role of dad and is providing us fatherly advice, and when you know what he's offering us and the liberation that he's offering us, the freedom and all these wonderful gifts that he's offering us, it does change your entire perspective. I mean, everything is changed, and for the better.
Oh, yeah.
And it's so uplifting. That's when I tell people that, yeah, I'm going to know Yah, you're going to have to give up your religion. And that scares people. And I said, oh, but what you're going to get in return? You know, you're giving up. Yeah, you're going to give up the bullpoo and you're going to gain paradise. We'll return in a moment. Hello and welcome back to the final segment today of Shattering Myths. This is what God has told us about something that is very, very important to him, which is, he said, you should observe the Shabbat, the day set apart, as your God instructed. Now, it's really interesting here. You know, if you're a religious Jew, then, man, the Shabbat, you got all sorts of things that you can't do. But God didn't say you can't do anything. Now, he's going to get down. He's going to share some insights as to what he wants us to recognize as important relative to this day in a moment. But he begins the statement is observe. Now, observe is not a doing word other than it means to keep your eyes open and to receive visual information so that you can consider it and respond to it properly. That's what observe means, which shamar means. And so it means you read it. Read what God had to say about the Shabbat. That's using your eyes to take in the information. And then based upon what you read that God says about the Shabbat, respond to that. So if you get to the point where, you know, boy, I'm not going to turn on the light switch. I'm not going to turn on my stove. You miss the whole point. So it says you should observe. It didn't say, you know, I'm laying down the law and you don't do nothing. No, observe.
So basically, observe. We're supposed to set aside time to read this Torah.
Absolutely.
On the Sabbath.
Yep. And what does he call the Shabbat? He calls the Shabbat, which is the seventh day of the week, not Sunday, which is the first day of the week. What does he call it? He says it's special. Kodesh is special. That's what it means. Set apart. You know, it's set apart. Everything that's important to God is Kodesh. This is, he says, the Shabbat is Kodesh. What is Kodesh? Kodesh means the set-apart spirit is Kodesh. It's Ruach Kodesh. That means she is set apart from God. The Yahusha is Kodesh Kodesh, which means he's the most set apart. He's not only set apart from God, but God with Yahusha has to convert some of his spiritual energy into matter. And so there's a second setting apart.
Right.
But when you're... The concept of being set apart works two ways. With Yahusha and with the set apart spirit, it's part of God being set apart from him for a specific purpose. That doesn't make two gods or three gods.
No.
It's just part of God being set apart from him for a specific purpose. It's, you know, it's almost as much as if I reach out my right hand and I control the mouse with my right hand, and reach out my left hand and I grab my coffee cup with my left hand. I'm setting apart two aspects of me. There aren't three me's. The other aspect of set apart is special. In other words, the Shabbat isn't an ordinary day. Special day. Special day that we're to observe, that means read Yah's testimony, is part of our relationship with Him to celebrate. Because it's special. Make it special. And the other issue of Shabbat is that it speaks of purification. That which is, so it's the day that God purifies us. But it's also the day that is associated with not working, because the whole idea of Shabbat is the seventh day, and it's also, Shabbat means promise. God's promise to us is that He resolves all of the things that are about us that are flawed. That's why the Torah is so liberating. It's God's responsibility to do this for us. That's His job. He's our dad.
I find the more I read, the better mood I am in my day-to-day life, and the easier things are to process and deal with.
It's absolutely true, unless what you're doing is what I'm doing right now, which is reading and translating and trying to edit Questioning Paul, and you're mired in that man's bull poo. that I tell you. but even then, there is a uplifting aspect of it, because you know that the end result is that a lot fewer people are going to continue to wallow in Pauline Christianity and that poo because of what you're able to share with them. Now, God then says here, observe, and then He ends it, as Yahweh your God has instructed. Okay, first there's that Yahweh guy again. God's one and only name. 7,000 times He uses that name. And He says, your observations ought to focus on Yahweh, your God's instructions, His guidance and His directions. So now He's explained observation, hasn't He?
Mm-hmm.
No way to miss it. This is a day that's special, that is set apart to observe Yahweh's instructions. You find Yahweh's instructions in the Torah, prophets, and Psalms. So it's the end of our program, Mariah. I do hope you call back, and we will continue to observe Yahweh's instructions tomorrow.
Yay!